Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
December 2nd, 2019. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to The Reaction here on the ChairShot Radio Network. I am your host. My name is Harry Broadhurst. Joining me, as per usual, the Down Since Day One co-host, Tony Acero.
Yo.
Unfortunately, Liz Puglisi had a family emergency and will be unable to join us this week. We hope to have her back next week for the Go Home to Tables, Ladders, and Chairs, the final pay-per-view of 2019. A lot to talk about tonight, Tony, and I know you said you have plans for after the show, so what do you say we get right to it?
Let's do it.
All right. Friday Night SmackDown has a open challenge from the New Day for the tag team titles in the main event slot. It is answered by Shinsuke Nakamura and Cesaro, and what turns into a pretty good match for the tag team titles here. And the New Day retain when Kofi Kingston catches Cesaro with the Trouble in Paradise while Big E and Shinsuke are laid out on the floor here. A couple of things to discuss here. One, your thoughts on Nakamura and Cesaro as a full-time tag team, even though Nakamura is currently the Intercontinental Champion.
I'm cool with it. I don't know that it'll be a long-lasting thing, but I'm not against that either. You know, more Cesaro on my TV is great. So if it means teaming with Shinsuke, even though he has a title, then fuck it.
Do you think we potentially see another person added to Sami's alliance here with the return vignette that aired for Sheamus earlier in the show and a possible reunification of the bar?
I kind of wanted to ask you that question, actually. Do you see Sheamus coming back as a single star, or do you see him coming towards back to team up with Cesaro?
Well, they kind of played it off like he was going to go since the singles route because he called out Chad Gable, again, not using that stupid-ass name. He called out Ali, who got his Mustafa back, as we discussed a couple of weeks ago. He called out a couple other people that are in more or less the singles division over on SmackDown. So, I mean, I'd be okay if Sheamus has one last run as a main event singles wrestler over on SmackDown, but I wouldn't be opposed to seeing the bar have another run just because of how much lack of depth is currently in the SmackDown tag team division.
Yeah. I don't know. Like I said, anything that gets Cesaro on TV more, I'm happy for. So if that means teaming with Sheamus, then fuck it.
Not to mention, we never had an official breakup of the team either. They went their separate ways when Cesaro was moved over to Raw in the Superstar Shakeup. That lasted for a fucking all of like 3 months. And with Shinsuke holding singles gold, it doesn't make sense, like you said, for him to remain inside of a tag team. Therefore, logically, at least to me, it would be reasonable that they would put Sheamus back with Cesaro, reunite a tag team that they know works, give the New Day quality opposition, and let Shinsuke defend the Intercontinental title. So what did you think of the match?
Oh, solid. I mean, I expect nothing less. You know, it was fun. It was a fun outing.
Did you or will you listen to the New Day's podcast?
I don't have time. I don't have time to – I barely have time to squeeze in wrestling, let alone adding a podcast to it. There's never a day where I'm not doing something anymore. I mean, it's great. I'm not complaining at all. It's awesome. But that is definitely low on the list.
I feel like you could play the podcast for everybody at the bar. Your bar could use a little bit of the power of positivity, John. I'm just saying.
I put SmackDown on Friday night in a packed place, and someone was like, "What the fuck is this?" It was great.
Watch one of these 60 other televisions, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm sure your bar has a bunch of TVs and stuff.
I put it on at the exact right moment, right when Sasha came out, and good fucking Lord, she looked so hot. Oh, she looked like she'd ruin my life. I love it.
Okay, well, I mean, I wasn't going to discuss this, but we might as well get to it here. Bayley and Sasha Banks addressing the status of the women's division over on SmackDown, and apparently the next challenger for Bayley's women's title over on SmackDown is going to be a newly face-turned question mark, Lacey Evans. Seemingly came out of nowhere to me. I'm not necessarily sure that I'm okay with this here because we haven't really seen much of Lacey on TV, even in the build to Survivor Series. She was briefly there for a little bit, but we haven't seen nearly as much of her as we did during the summer. Do you think you can repackage Lacey as the All-American girl and have people cheering here? I know she was getting a little bit of a reaction, but in fairness, they were in Alabama. That place is kind of ass backwards as it is.
I don't have interest in Lacey, face or heel. And she just doesn't appeal to me at all. Not in the wrestling department, not in the looks department. Her character was solid, was one of those few that isn't transferable, I don't think. Mainly because it doesn't have any depth. It can. I think that it's a fully fledged character in her mind, but they've done a really shitty job of portraying it.
Aw, Puddin.
Hey, boo.
She heard what she said about Sasha, and she's not happy.
That's fine. I like angry AJ.
I feel like there are better options on SmackDown than Lacey Evans for Bayley to feud with. And one of those options is a woman who returned a little bit later on in the show, in Alexa Bliss. I mean, I know we've seen Alexa and Bayley before, but we don't really get this side of it as much as with the heel Bayley and the face Alexa.
Man, that's a whole lot of booty.
America. All right, the other actual talking point is, and I'm going to give you verbatim how I worded this in the preview. Things get hairy as Brian and Bray want to play. I'm proud of that. I don't necessarily know that I should be, but I am. A series of Firefly Funhouses throughout the evening. The return of the Muscle Man dance, although with much darker undertones this time than the original one had. And as Daniel Bryan is seemingly about to resurrect the Yes Movement in the ring, the lights go out and we see Bray Wyatt pull a cane. I mean, he stole his red lighting. He might as well. Coming up through the ring and dragging Daniel Bryan underneath the ring and apparently pulling out chunks of Bryan's hair. Tony, you watch PWG, right?
Not necessarily.
Or
I've been with you.
You have watched
PWG.
You have watched PWGs.
Oh yeah.
Are you familiar with Daniel Bryan's run in PWG at all as Bryan Danielson?
No, not really.
Okay, do you remember any of his run in Ring of Honor, his Ring of Honor champion as Jedi Bryan?
Mm-hmm.
This seemingly is the setup for that, with the bald head and the facial hair and like the Jedi robe, and I'd be all about it.
Yeah, well,
a nice throwback to a previous time in Bryan's career. Him seemingly reinteracting with the fans once again and kind of relaunching the Yes Movement despite stating that he wasn't going to. And somebody on Twitter had an interesting theory that the Wyatt character, the Fiend character, is going to be used to change face and heel alignments because it's happened for all three of his opponents so far. Balor turned heel after feuding with Bray. Rollins turned heel after feuding with Bray, and seemingly Bryan is in the midst of turning babyface feuding with Bray. Your thoughts on that characterization, as well as your thoughts on the potential new look for Daniel Bryan?
I'm cool with the new look. I think that, you know, Daniel Bryan could pull off anything. With regards to, you know, the Fiend changing alignment, that I just don't think that holds water. It's cool. It's a nice little tidbit, but it's not something they're intentionally doing. They don't have the wherewithal to do that.
All right, I'd play the quick hits theme here, but we have other stuff to get to. Therefore, let's go ahead and do so. The show opens with Roman Reigns addressing everybody and wishing everyone a happy Thanksgiving. He congratulates the rest of his team from Survivor Series because this is the first SmackDown post Survivor Series, and specifically congratulates Ollie, Gable, and Strowman. Sorry, hiccups. While calling out Baron Corbin to the ring. Corbin and Reigns interact, going back and forth for a little bit. Corbin brags about being king and throws out all the king cliches you can think of in about 30 seconds. And then offers up one of his underlings in Robert Roode to fight Roman Reigns to start the show. We see the match. I'm going to segue right into it here. Reigns picks up the victory in just under 14 minutes. It's the post-match that we're talking about here, though, as Roode attempts to take out Reigns, hitting him in the back of the head with the scepter and then looking to smash his head up against the steel chair before Roman moves and then lays Robert Roode out, putting him over the announce table through the barricade and then dumping the announce table on top of him after spearing him through the barricade at ringside, sending Roode out on a stretcher. Two-part question. One, do you think it's too much too soon again with Roman? Do you think that we need more of a difficult climb for Roman here? Are you okay with him being made to look so strongly, air quotes on an audio podcast, coming off of the Survivor Series where he was the last man standing for SmackDown?
Well, I don't think that you can slow burn it, but it's not offensive to have him go through someone like Robert Roode. Corbin, every word that comes out of their mouths is just some of the worst, you know, writing that I've experienced in wrestling, and it just sucks because it comes off really hokey, and I don't know. I'm not, anytime anybody talks on SmackDown recently, I've not been a fan except for Daniel Bryan. This was really no different. But no, I'm not upset about it. I don't think that there's an issue with Reigns going back to the main event picture. It's how he's booked when he's in there that the issue arises.
Seeming set up for a stretcher match between Corbin and Roman, probably at tables, ladders, and chairs. You okay with this match as long as it's the blow-off to their feud?
I find stretcher matches kind of dumb. I don't find them entertaining at all. So, sure, why not?
The issue is that they have a certain redundancy to them.
Mm-hmm. Very much.
Like
they're
pretty much all the same. The only one that I can think that really stands out is the Big Show and Rey Mysterio one, and that's more famous for what happens after the match than what happens during it.
All right.
Firefly Funhouse. Mustafa Ali and Drew Gulak. Well, at least Gulak wasn't getting squashed by Strowman this week. He instead got squashed by Mustafa Ali in about 3 minutes instead. What can you really do with Ali, though? You've already had him made to look like a bitch against Shinsuke Nakamura, so a run against the Intercontinental Champion is out. He's damn sure not challenging Bray Wyatt for the Universal title. What do you do with Mustafa Ali here?
I mean, they don't know, but they want to keep them, you know, in the eyes of the fans. So I get it. And it was inoffensive to have them win. So I really didn't mind this part.
My heart weeps a little bit for Drew Gulak, though. All right, moving on. Women's division here. And then Nikki Cross takes on Sonya Deville and the match goes 2 minutes. Yay! Evolution! Nikki gets the pinfall after being slammed off of the top. Sonya goes to capitalize, and Nikki catches her in a roll-up with a small package cradle for the three count. Post-match, Fire and Desire attack Nikki Cross when Alexa Bliss makes her return after being off of TV for about 3 months.
Yeah, this was solely just to bring Alexa back, and I'm with it.
I worry for Alexa's physical well-being, though, because she keeps getting hurt.
Yeah, it's not my job to worry about that.
You're just more interested in certain parts of her. I get it.
Mm-hmm.
Brian and Miz have a little bit of an interesting back and forth backstage. Miz actually admits that the SmackDown locker room needs Brian. He starts to say that Brian's family needs Brian as well until Brian shoots him a look and Miz walks away. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago, Tony, but I think this is another example here of these two fully understanding their characters' interactions with each other and being able to play it off so masterfully on a week-to-week basis. In my opinion,
yeah,
I don't think there are two better mic workers on SmackDown.
No, I really don't either. I think that they take the role differently than other people do. When you look at someone like The Miz or Daniel Bryan, and then you compare them to someone like Lana, you realize that although they're portraying a character, they're firmly entrenched in said character at that moment. Whereas Lana sounds like, and produces like she's a caricature of a character. Like, she's not even real, nor does she make sense. And I think there's too much confidence in her. And I think that with The Miz, as confident as his character is, there's a lot of humility in continuous growth in just trying to be a better performer, actor, wrestler, whatever it may be. So, yeah, they definitely feed off of each other. And I bet they have total creative control, or at least for the most part, you know, input taken in and everything.
I don't know why I called him Eli Drake. Try that again. Eli Drake is on NWA Power Tuesday nights, 6:05. Now Jim Cornette free, thankfully, so I'll actually be watching. Drake Maverick attempts to hit on Dana Brooke because apparently Renee Michelle no longer exists in WWE canon. Dana Brooke shoots down Drake Maverick, but is seemingly interested in the advances of one Elias, making his return from an ankle injury. A lot of returns on this show, Tony.
Yeah, and unfortunately for Elias, his wasn't nearly as compelling.
Not to mention, I think we all know that Dana's attentions are on Batista nowadays. There was a meme about that with the Mandy's Donuts, Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville's donut vlog that they do. I don't know if you've seen the meme. If you haven't, I'll have to find it and send it to you. It's pretty funny.
No, I haven't seen it.
All right. The main event is the aforementioned tag team title defense. Although one thing I will say that caught me kind of by surprise that they actually allowed him to reference something so current culture. Were you able to listen to Big E's mic work during this? I know you were probably at the bar. Were you able to listen to the mic work during the course of SmackDown, or were you just kind of watching on mute?
Yeah, I was watching on mute, and I didn't have the captions on because football fans don't like when words are on the screen during passes.
Well, one of the things that Big E referenced during the course of talking about this, about his dinner from Thanksgiving was he mentioned that he had beans, greens, potatoes, tomatoes, you know, that bit that's going around.
Yeah, it's about 3 years old, so he's not really current.
Oh, by Vince standards, though, that's like cutting edge.
Yeah.
And that officially wraps up SmackDown. We move over to tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw, and I am unapologetically quoting Justin Bieber when writing this Raw preview, Tony. Is it too late for Seth to say sorry?
Hmm.
No, Seth. Thanks, Dick.
Yeah, no.
No, not a believer, huh?
No.
His new His new song with Ed Sheeran isn't bad, actually.
He's a great singer.
My girlfriend listens to pop music. It's not something that I'm regularly listening to either. All right, anyway, Seth Rollins comes out to start the show. Well, after we have a backstage segment with the Authors of Pain being ambushed by Charlie backstage, Rollins comes out to start the show and attempts to apologize, again, air quotes on an audio podcast, by stating that what he said last week was misinterpreted and that he has a lot of care about this brand and he wants it the best for everybody on it because everybody in the back is like family to him. So he calls out Kevin Owens. Owens eventually responds, and then right as Seth and Kevin are about to continue their discussion, the AOP come out onto the stage as well. The AOP offer up a tag team match. Kevin Owens might be the smartest man in the building, Tony. Yep. Like, how happy were you to see that wrestling cliche avoided right there? I know it's something that you talk about on the show a lot, about the tropes of wrestling booking there. And the one where Seth would have teamed with Kevin and then obviously turned on Kevin against the AOP the night after last week is a tried-and-true format for wrestling here, and Kevin kind of sees it coming.
Yeah, and it's those little things that, you know, any type of creative medium, you want to take what you know and you want to make it new. So his ability to do that was very, very fun and funny. So I enjoyed it. I enjoyed Kevin's work. I don't mind Seth's slow burn into inevitable heeldom. We've said it before, you know, the best heels are the ones that truly and firmly believe in what they're saying. So if he continues this path, then realistically speaking, whether we think he's wrong or he's right, the belief that he has, it makes him a compelling character.
Eventually, Seth walks out, but the AOP leave as well, not disturbing the situation. Kevin's ready for a fight, however, and issues an open challenge. It is answered by Lana, and oh boy. Do we have to discuss her mic work? I mean, do we have to? Can we not?
I mean, the issue is that this person, okay, never mind that she just signed a new agreement for 5 more fucking years. Never mind that she's been in films or at least one film and movie. When you watch this, like, do you as a person not go back and look at that and say, maybe I'm doing something wrong? I get it. You're supposed to be an annoying character. You're supposed to be unliked and undeserving. And it's one of those things where she says, like, we're getting really tired of people booing us. That's great. That's heel work. That makes sense. What she said right now was exactly what Kevin Owens said. You're saying so much without saying anything. And again, I've said this before, anytime the show points out a flaw of a character that is like not a part of their character, it's insulting to me as a fan because that means that you know how bad this is and you're still letting it happen. Like,
I will say this much, for as much as we've dogged this storyline on the show, for as much shit as we've given this storyline on the show, assuming those were legitimate crowd reactions, because in my opinion, I thought the crowd was a little piped tonight. I heard a lot of noise when I didn't see a whole lot of movement in the crowd, but the reactions that Rusev got when he came in to attack Lashley during that match with Owens, the fans are definitely behind Rusev here. Again,
yeah,
we question how much of that is piped. Go ahead, Tony, and then I'll talk about it.
Well, like, even piped or not, Rusev has been getting a lot of love through this stuff. And, I mean, people are watching. Greg shows us the numbers on Twitter all the time just to prove a point that I disagree with. But, he's getting a reaction, and that's great. But this is, like, I don't know. There's like better ways to create characters, and how long is this gonna last?
There's better ways to create characters than Lana trying out for Black.com.
And hiring detectives. You don't hire a detective to protect you. This isn't fucking Man on Fire. You don't. And those detectives, like, they didn't move at all. Like, it was just a really shitty segment. The whole thing. Horribly done.
But on the plus side, at least Rusev's getting over. So there's that. Okay, so we kind of talked about this on the show last week, Tony, and we saw it play out a little bit further tonight. Drew McIntyre and Randy Orton. I think I sent the message in the group chat. I am there for that match. Sign me up. Especially if it's motivated Randy Orton.
Oh, yeah, and I think he is motivated. I mean, you could tell just by his facial reactions and everything. What bugged me about this segment in particular was that they – and this is a small gripe, and it's something that I think probably only I will be upset about. But I feel like they noticed that we really enjoyed something, and they, like, just had to, like, double down on it. Like, they couldn't have just let it be a moment. They had to bring it up, and you talk about piped-in cheers. What about piped-in chops? Like, they made that sound louder than it was last week, and it's just like – it's the same way I felt like when they – when they realized we really liked the Raw after WrestleMania, like, can't you just let us have our moment? But other than that, this is a program that I'm firmly behind. And when you look at them and you hear the promos and you watch it, this is one of those things where this match is a little bit bigger than other matches. And I like that. I like that feel because we don't get that enough anymore. You know, when you put like a John Cena versus Randy Orton on a poster or that little standoff that they had for just a second that you know they're going to use over and over again. That with Drew and Randy just makes sense. It looks good.
Can I make a bold prediction, Tony?
Sure.
This is one of your WrestleMania matches.
That'd be nice.
Because they're seemingly doing everything that they can to avoid getting them into any kind of physical confrontation with each other tonight by having AJ Styles and the OC interrupt to bring up their grievances with Orton as well, causing McIntyre to powder from the ring. Styles,
yeah.
And
I really
and
like that
the
too.
OC.
I
go
really
ahead.
Like the idea that there's, you know, the best wrestling shows have wrestlers that they're not just dealing with one person. Like Orton is not liked by AJ right now. And while we're, you know, we're probably going to segue into AJ, I just got to say, this is a man, this guy is gold. When's the last time you saw someone get truly, truly butthurt and angry about losing their title the way AJ has right now? That's what makes the belt. Like, that's like you broke his heart.
To steal a line from Carl Anderson, look at AJ. Handsome, charismatic, with such great hair. But more importantly, the character work that you mentioned there with AJ as he comes down to rant and rave about, without actually ranting and raving, very concisely to the point here, which is appreciated after Lana going off the goddamn rails earlier in the show. Styles makes the point known that, Orton, you cost me my title, so I'm going to have to fuck you up. And it's
simple.
In that mind frame, AJ and the OC get into the ring and proceed to start fucking Orton up until the save is made by Ricochet and Rey Mysterio and Humberto Carrillo, kind of weirdly taking Orton out of that picture and setting us up instead for Styles and the OC to take on Ricochet, Carrillo, and Rey in a six-man tag match later on in the show. I would think that this is going to slowly build towards AJ and Rey running it back at Tables, Ladders, and Chairs for the U.S. title. And then eventually we get back to Styles and Orton as well. But were you surprised to see them not involve Orton in tonight's six-man main event?
Not offhand. I kind of like that they didn't because why would he team with them? He literally said, like, I don't need your guys' help. And it wouldn't necessarily gain much for Orton. All that he needed to do was make a statement that said, yeah, I'm watching you too, and hit an RKO at the end of the show.
That six-man tag team match does main event the show, and Team Styles and the OC pick up the victory when Styles catches Ricochet as he's trying to come back in the ring, Ricochet with a kickflip off of the ring post onto Carl Anderson. He tries to take Styles off the top rope with the top rope Hurricane Rana. Styles reverses it into an avalanche Styles clash for the three count. I like the fact that they gave AJ a win to get back into the victory column after losing the title last week here. I don't necessarily like the fact that it was Ricochet that ate the fall when Humberto Carrillo's in the match, and they've apparently soured on Carrillo, so Carrillo was there and he could have eaten the fall to protect Ricochet. At the same time, we've kind of seen a very firm history between AJ and Ricochet, so I'm not opposed to their interactions either. What did you think of the six-man tag match that main evented the show tonight?
was the best match of the night for sure. I've seen conflicting things about the Charlotte and Asuka, the Kabuki Warriors match. A lot of people seem to like it, but I thought it was boring. So this was for sure the best match. I don't mind Ricochet losing. I think he's one of those guys that's really untouchable. Like, regardless of how many times he loses, it's not going to be a big deal. He's just got to hit a big move and everyone will love him again. So that decision didn't really upset me in one way or another. Yeah, it was a good main event for a pretty lackluster Raw. Like, it wasn't bad except for Lana, but...
You mentioned Orton coming out at the end of the show and laying out Styles with the RKO. Do you think that they do Orton and Styles sooner rather than later? Like, do you think we see that match at Tables, Ladders, and Chairs, or do we see AJ and Ray run it back at TLC instead?
Well, yeah, the good news about involving everybody the way that they did tonight with, like, the kind of somewhat interwoven stories and or teams is that you got plenty of time to make some matches here, and each one of them can be a pay-per-view caliber match. So if we get Ray versus AJ, that's not offensive. I like that. That's cool. And then Ray Mysterio can move on to something else. And then AJ and Orton can, you know, mess around. You also have Ricochet chilling there, maybe wanting to get a win back. There's a lot of moving parts here that I think can really, really help out. I just, you know, I don't know what it is. I just, every time Luke Gallows gets in the ring, I get kind of bored.
I can't stop seeing Festus. That's my personal problem with him. Do you like the fact that there's this much ambiguity? Tony, help me out. Thank you. In the matches when we're just 13 days away from the pay-per-view?
You know, look, stuff like that has never bothered me nearly as much as other people. Because the pay-per-view model has changed. That's unfortunate, and sometimes I struggle with that reality. But I've said it before. You can make a match in, like, one show, you know? It's not a matter of, you know, making the match for the card. It's a matter of how important it's made, whether it be within that 5 minutes or over the last several weeks. And that's the biggest problem that the WWE has. If you got a pay-per-view in 2 weeks, then instead of focusing on, like, making random-ass matches, how about you use that pay-per-view as kind of like a break in a page. You know, it's the same chapter of a story that you're telling. You're using the same characters. You're trying to get to the ultimate point. This is just a break in the page. Instead of saying, oh, God, we need this to be another chapter. We need another this, that, or whatever. And I think that if they were to look at it that way, then we don't necessarily need to know every single match on the card, but you do need something to sell it. And they just need to find that nice middle ground. And you would think after several years in the business that they would, but obviously we've seen over the years that they can't.
Okay, the phrase that I was looking for was the ambiguous nature of the card. I just couldn't say it for the life of me. Do you think that this is part of the influence of Paul Heyman's booking, similar to how we used to see with ECW, that they would announce a couple of main matches for pay-per-views, but never really give you the undercard and just kind of let it fill itself out as the show progressed?
No, I think this is just a symptom of bad writing. It's just, I don't think that it's purposefully not created. I don't think that they are very into the future type people. They're very short-sighted, not them like as humans, but as a writing team. They're very, very, what are we doing today? We've heard stories of scripts being written and rewritten on the same day, turned in like minutes before the show starts. So I just don't think that they have the wherewithal to focus on the future, and that's something that comes with a mind like Heyman or a mind like people that just have that. Like, when you're writing something, what is your goal here? What are you trying to present? What are you trying to sell? And then go from there. I don't think that they write that way. I think that they write for the day of, hoping that, you know, Vince likes it.
Bang, 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 bang. Try and stop it. Bang, bang. Here I come. Bang.
Quick hits.
Bang.
We already discussed the Owens and Lashley match a little bit earlier. Disqualification finish similar to what we saw at the Starrcade house show on the day before. So basically, second time's twice as nice, I suppose. allegedly, whatever. As Lana and Lashley were being arrested, the Street Profits and R-Truth were hanging out, watching the scene. I can't repeat what you said in the Raw report about what this qualified as, but if you'd like to share here, by all means, you're more than welcome to.
I don't remember what I said.
Lamenting the loss of their fallen brother or something along those lines.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, basically. Due to losing another one to the white woman.
All hate mail can be sent to Tony Acero.
It can be. Please
or
do.
You could. Well, find them on Twitter. What's your Twitter, Tony? At Tony Acero?
Tony Acero 411, I think.
Ah. And you can read his Raw review over on 411mania.com/wrestling. So, make sure you check out the chairshot.com's Raw reviews as well from Stephen Mitchell while we're at it. Make sure we plug our own shit here on this show, too. All right, let's move on. Drew McIntyre and Akira Tozawa. I like the fact that McIntyre kind of showed a little bit of personality, kind of teasing and toying with Tozawa here. Tozawa got an opportunity to get a little bit of a shine in, but let's be honest here, Tozawa didn't have a snowball's chance in hell in this match.
Not at all, but he took that Claymore like a motherfucker.
It's like McIntyre told Orton, RKO out of nowhere has been replaced by Claymore out of nowhere. I mean, you can still kind of see the Claymore coming, but it hits like a son of a bitch when it does, though. All right. Aleister Black back on television in a match against Tony Nese here. Tony Nese ends up falling in about 3 minutes with the black mask. Do you like the shorter matches on television and saving the longer length stuff for pay-per-view, or do you think that we should be getting more on a in-ring content on a week-to-week basis for Monday Night Raw?
Now, I think it's on a case-by-case basis. I mean, realistically, you want some wrestlers to have a mystique about them. You also want them to be healthy. And, you know, hypothetically, the longer the match, the more likely it is that someone could get hurt. So you want to keep those things, you know, in mind when you're producing a show. But if the story calls for, you know, a lengthy match, then why not do it? To show someone's acumen or wrestling, you know, prowess, then of course you're going to want some longer matches. In this particular case, I don't care one way or the other.
We see Andrade pick up another victory as well as he defeats Eric Young with the Hammerlock DDT. Kind of weird to see Eric Young working babyface. Makes sense in his hometown. He's born in Canada but moved to Nashville a couple of years ago. So it made sense given that they were in his hometown. The match itself I thought was pretty good. Andrade once again picking up another marquee victory. Again, I asked the same question with Andrade that I asked with Ali over on SmackDown. Where does Andrade go from here?
That's something I can't answer. It's one of those people you got to keep in the upper echelon of the main event card or the, you know, the main eventers, but you can't quite put them in there yet because it's a little crowded. So you just give them matches like this to keep them in people's minds and assure that you haven't forgotten about him or Zelina. So I'm for it. It's fine.
The 24/7 title is in the hands of a NASCAR driver.
Nope.
I don't have a question to ask about that. I just felt the need to make that as a statement because if that's fucking stupid, saying it out loud, you realize just how fucking dumb it is.
I didn't even know who those people were.
I know who Michael Waltrip is just because I watched back when Dale Sr. used to race. I don't watch modern NASCAR. It's not something that appeals to me anymore. But when I was a kid, I would watch guys like Senior, guys like Jeff Gordon. All right, anyway. Charlie has an interview with Seth backstage, and Seth kind of calls Charlie out on her shit, stating that he offered to work things out with Kevin Owens, and Owens didn't want to work things out. He tells Charlie that it's easy to be a critic, but it's more difficult because not everybody can be a leader. I kind of like the descent into madness that Rollins is undergoing here. He believes that all the pressure of the Raw locker room is on his shoulders, and he's slowly crashing at the seams.
Yeah, that's the slow burn. That's the belief that, you know, usually when a wrestler turns heel, what I've seen over the past couple of years is they come out and they just do exactly what he's doing, but in like 5 minutes. And it just comes off as hokey. Like, didn't you just love the crowd like 2 weeks ago? It's like, you turned your back on me and you weren't there and blah, blah, blah. And, well, Seth is over here like, I'm trying to make this place better. I'm trying to give you a better product. I'm trying to be a better wrestler. I'm trying to be a better leader because we don't have one. And you guys are all throwing it in my fucking face. So you know what? Fine. And then boom. And I think that is much more effective over the long run than a 5-minute promo in the ring that just states, I'm now a bad guy.
Eric Rowan continues to get TV time. I continue to not care. No way, Jose, the unfortunate victim this week. Okay, I say unfortunate. I don't care about No Way Jose either. I think that might have been my biggest problem with this match, is I didn't have anybody that I'm invested in, so I kind of just zoned out.
Well, yeah, of course.
Asuka and Kairi cut a promo backstage in Gorilla before coming out for the handicap match. The handicap match ends up going for 16 minutes, which I thought was way too long for what it needed to be. It wasn't a bad match, but I agree with you, Tony. I thought it definitely dragged in places. I do like the fact that Kairi and Asuka got the victory. I was worried for a while that Charlotte was going to overcome the odds and beat the tag team champions by her fucking self, but thankfully they didn't go that route. I do still think that this is going to end up leading us to Kairi and Asuka defending the tag team titles at the pay-per-view against Charlotte and somebody, maybe Becky, maybe somebody else on the Monday Night Raw roster. I don't know who else is available, really. I can't say I paid that much. Maybe Naomi comes back because the rumors are she's supposed to be returning to the road soon. So overall, you said yourself that you thought that the handicap match was kind of boring. Why did you feel that way?
Well, first, I don't think it needed to happen. What was the point of this? Like, I don't know. I mean, I'm hoping they get something out of it because Charlotte's little interview afterwards could mean that they're using that as a, you know, catalyst for something. But, like, what reason did we have this match? Second, I don't know. It's just there wasn't a lot of fluidity because it was two people beating up on one. And just seeing Charlotte kind of, like, get the upper hand so often, it was a little annoying, but not to the point where I was just bothered. But in terms of wrestling technicality, I just didn't think it was as solid as a Asuka versus Charlotte one-on-one match. Something didn't click for me.
Yeah, I definitely thought the one-on-one match between Asuka and Charlotte last week was better. And that was an example of giving two people the time to tell a story inside of the ring rather than trying to fill it with fluff on the outside, ended up working out to your advantage here. I think this was a case where too much time in the ring actually hurt the product, like you mentioned earlier with the case-by-case basis here. This is one of those times where, yeah, the match went 16 minutes, but did it really need to when you could have probably told the same story in about 10? Viking Raiders win a squash match. You're tag team champions, ladies and gentlemen. Your tag team champions. We thought the SmackDown tag division was shit. Okay, so somebody had the idea before. How would you feel about floating champions?
Same way I feel about anything. If it's done well, then sure, but I just don't think it is. It's not impossible to make these belts important. You can have an amazing program with only two teams if you do it right. Most fucking indie feds do that.
I mean, look at how well Ring of Honor handled Young Bucks Hardys. People were there. People were invested. People were emotionally entertained and connected to the matches there, and they only had like three matches against each other in Ring of Honor. So you can tell a story in a short period of time in a tag team division and make tag teams matter. It just seems like they're not invested enough in the tag team division on either show right now to really keep a tag team division on both.
Yeah.
I could argue that the NXT tag team division's kind of gone downhill in terms of quality of competition as well since the move to Wednesday nights for NXT, but that's a different conversation for another day.
Mm-hmm.
Main event was the six-man tag team match. We already discussed that, and that brings us to an end for tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw. One quick thing that I wanted to discuss with you before we got into our final reaction. Tony, you ready?
Yep.
AEW Dynamite lost for a second week in a row to NXT on Wednesday. I know we don't usually talk numbers here, but if you're, let's say, the Cons or TNT, how worried are you that in less than 3 months, AEW has already lost more than half of its original audience?
I mean, if I'm them, I'm not even looking at ratings, to be honest with you. It's just such an archaic way of thinking. The way that you get viewers nowadays is just way different. AEW, of all companies, should know that and probably does know that because they market different. They have an entire show dedicated to an online presence only. So I wouldn't really, let that bother me. I'm hoping that they projected that. I'm hoping that they assumed this was going to happen or something close to it was going to happen because, of course, you're going to be going hard out the gate. And, you know, that's just how it is. So if they're smart businessmen, and I think they are, then they already knew this was going to come.
Rumors are that TNT has stated that they would be happy with anything over 500,000 for the time slot. They're currently at about 700,000 right now. So I would imagine that TNT is okay with that. That being said, does TNT start getting concerned if that number hits the half a mil or even underneath it?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm just unaware, but I just don't use. When's the last time that ratings for wrestling shows mattered? I don't remember. I just know that. I know that 411 used to be big on, like, literally reporting numbers every single week, and everybody cared about it. And, of course, we had the Monday Night Wars where ratings were, like, the be-all, end-all. But I just don't see that anymore. It's not about – because you're not trying to compete, or at least they shouldn't be. I don't want – if I were a wrestling brand, I wouldn't want to compete with NXT or WWE, and I wouldn't want to be compared to them either. I would want you to leave me alone and just either enjoy my product or don't.
Fair enough. One other quick thing about Raw and SmackDown here. Had this conversation with a couple of friends of mine while we were watching Survivor Series, wanted to bring it to the podcast. Do you think we need a Regal-like figure for Raw and SmackDown in order to confirm the matches that we're seeing or to help advance us to the next step of our storyline rather than just randomly having two wrestlers go, I don't like you, I don't like you, we should fight, okay. And when we come back from the commercial break, they're fighting.
I think that they are used to a certain structure, and that's why we see it so often. But personally, I've always been a fan of wrestlers saying, I don't like you, and I'm going to beat your ass for it. And you don't like me, and you're going to fight me. So I'm okay with that aspect of it, as long as it's done in a way that's at least a little bit creative. No revolving door promo, no random, you know, one day I like you, and now I'm for the unity of this Raw brand, which is still WWE, I'm going to fight side by side with you. Do we need a person in charge like Regal? No, I don't think so. I do like that his presence is there when it matters and it's not when it doesn't. So if we had someone like that, it'd be cool, but it's not a necessity. I really don't think it is.
All right, that officially wraps it up here for tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw. And thus ends our discussion for both Raw and SmackDown, therefore taking us to our final reaction. You ready?
Yep.
All right. Favorite match or moment from SmackDown or Raw?
I'm going to give it to the main event of Raw. Like I said, it wasn't – it was definitely the highlight of Raw. SmackDown had a really good main event too, but I think Raw just takes it this week.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the six-man tag as well with an honorable mention to the McIntyre-Orton interaction and hopeful tease for them delivering. I'm hoping it gets pushed back to Mania. Like, this is the kind of time of the year that you start to see these slow burns towards Mania matches if they can wait that long. I'm a little bit more optimistic about that happening with Heyman in charge over Monday Night Raw, because Heyman has a gift for the slow burn. Look at what happened with Sabu and Taz in ECW. So I'm hoping that this is just kind of planting the seeds for Orton and McIntyre to blow that off at Mania in what should be a really good singles match. Greg Watry for Raw and SmackDown.
Lana, for sure. Baron Corbin is a honorable mention, but just everything that this woman has been doing has been horrible. Really, really bad. And I don't get why they're allowing it to continue to happen to the point where they're pointing out how bad it is.
It's working for Rusev, though, so I'm not going to be as opposed to it as you are. I'm going to go with the 24/7 title. And the fact that they put the title on a fucking NASCAR driver. Score for SmackDown.
7. Good main event. 2-hour shows, just they usually come off a little better, and I think that's the only reason why this got a 7 is because it was tightly woven together, but yeah, it wasn't anything to celebrate.
It's a whole lot harder for SmackDown to overstay its welcome than it is for Raw with the hour difference. I'll agree with that completely.
Yeah.
I'm at a 6.5 for SmackDown. I enjoyed it, but I thought it could have been a little bit better. I think Nia should have closed the show, given the fact that you had the main event being as good as it was with the tag team title match, but I understand that with the segment with Bray cutting up through the ring, obviously that had to go on last because New Day and Cesaro and Nakamura couldn't wrestle in the broken ring. Well, maybe they could. It is Cesaro. He's worked miracles before.
Yes. Sweating in jogger pants. Awesome.
But, yeah, I'm going to go with a 6.5 for SmackDown. How about tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw?
I want to say a 6. I was close. I was leaning towards 5. When you look at Raw, not a lot happened. There's a lot of squash matches. I'm torn because I'm cool with them utilizing the cruiserweights to basically lose to the bigger guys. I know that you have a soft spot for them. I know a lot of fans do. But they're getting TV time. They're getting taken care of. They have no character that's going to be hurt. There's no burying that's going to be done because no one's watching them anyway. So it's not like they're hurt. And when they are being watched, they're being watched on a completely different show that, you're not going to be like, oh, I lost to Drew McIntyre last night. So I'm cool with it. And it also, they're also great. They're great wrestlers. So you're not getting squash matches. You're getting a nice little sprint. And that just makes me happy.
I'm right there with you for a 6 tonight. I thought that we didn't get a ton of long matches, but we had a couple of good matches. And we had some strong character work as well from other people, people like AJ Styles, people like McIntyre, people like Orton. Even to a lesser extent, somebody like Rey and Humberto Carrillo in the little exchange that they had backstage where Carrillo kind of plays that Prince Puma route to Rey Mysterio in Lucha Underground, the man that Humberto grew up idolizing. So we had some decent character development from tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw, even if the stories weren't always told inside of the ring. Yeah, there were a couple of things that fell flat, but over the course of a 3-hour show, you're going to have some turds,
Mm-hmm.
Who's your MVP for the week, Tony?
Shit. I'm going to give it to AJ Styles. Just making that belt look like the most important thing ever. Awesome.
I'm going to go with Big E from SmackDown. Thoroughly entertaining in the promo before the match, and the fans definitely knew the reference that he was making because they were laughing right along with him when he made it. But then they got serious, and when it came time to throw down in the tag team title defense, Big E was putting in that work like he always does.
Mm-hmm.
So, not to mention, we didn't really talk about the pre-show from Survivor. Have you had a chance to watch Survivor Series yet?
No.
Well, if you even if you don't get a chance to watch the full show, I recommend the three-way tag team champions three-way from the pre-show, because all six guys put in one hell of an effort for a pre-show match, and what basically could have been a throwaway ended up being one of the better matches on the entire show.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to watch it. I just have to do something.
All right, Tony, I have to ask, what are you going to see tonight?
Ford Ferrari. I've been wanting to see this for weeks, and none of my friends, not my sister, nobody wants to see it. I guess they're just not interested in it. But I mean, it's Christian Bale, you know.
Christine and I are actually planning on going to see a movie this weekend. I'm going to go with another very well-known actor and a somewhat interesting twist for him. I'm going to go see Tom Hanks.
Okay, just I don't know how you are with your manhood and tears, but just be prepared.
I'm fully ready to cry during the course of this movie, Tony, and I have accepted it as a possibility.
it wasn't even, you know, when films have that moment where you're tearing up or whatever, it wasn't that one big crescendo of emotion. It was just a bunch of little things where you're just like, oh my God, all right, this guy was a fucking gem, and Tom Hanks is a gem. You can't put two gems into one person. No, it was a great movie. You guys are going to love it.
Did you know that they were actually related?
I didn't know they were related. I didn't even know. So when I have a chance to not know what a movie's about, I will do that to the best of my ability. And when you look at this, I didn't really look at the trailer. I just knew Tom Hanks was playing Mr. Rogers. I admittedly thought it was going to be some sort of a biopic. So when I started watching the movie and I realized it was more of a relationship between a writer and, you know, Mr. Rogers, which didn't take away from anything, it just – I kind of sat back and took it all in, and it was just a really good – a really good movie, a really good insight to the guy's life. I watched Mr. Rogers growing up, and it was cool. Same. It was a great movie. I didn't know they were related, though.
Tom Hanks and Fred Rogers are third cousins.
Nice.
And I saw that, unlike you, I have seen the trailer. He is dead on for the look of Mr. Rogers, of Fred Rogers as well.
Oh, dead on. Mannerisms, the way he expresses, every slow beat that he takes while he talks, it's beautiful.
If you're looking for an interesting biopic about it, there was one released on Fred Rogers a couple of years ago that I think I may have the link saved for if you're interested.
Yeah, shoot it over.
All right, we'll do. That's going to do it for tonight's episode of the show here. Tony's got a movie to watch. I'm going the fuck to bed because it's like 12:30 a.m. Eastern here on the East Coast. So for the absent co-hostess with the mostest, Miss Liz Puglisi, and the down since day one co-host, Tony Acero, I'm Harry Broadhurst, thanking you for listening to this episode of The Reaction here on the Chairshot Radio Network, online at thechairshot.com. Tony.
Deuces, bitches.
It feels wrong to close up the show with that line after we just talked about Mr. Rogers. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll catch you for the Go Home for TLC next week. Have been listening to The Raw Reaction with Harry Broadhurst, Tony Acero, and Liz Puglisi. You know what? Old habits die hard. Let's try this again. You have been listening to The Reaction. Clearly, I do these live. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you guys next week for the Go Home to Table Platters and Chairs here on the Chairshot Radio Network, online at thechairshot.com. Always use your head.
Thechairshot.com. Always use your head.